You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
So, welcome back, guys. I bet some of you guys noticed with last week's Matilda, now this week's Casper the Friendly Ghost, there might be a theme also on top of Precocious Kids, right? This is another movie, like Matilda, that I've had in the back pocket, you know, had next in the chamber for a long time. We've said stay tuned for this for years, just like Matilda. This movie was everything we wanted it to be for an episode and does not hold up really well at all. It's quite creepy, and I hope you guys enjoy the fact that we did it for you, so maybe you don't have to. But frankly, knowing our audience, a lot of you have probably seen it about 1,000 times. So, I guess with that in mind, enjoy this episode, but I'm really, really sorry. But with that in mind, go to the Facebook group and tell us which episodes you want us to do. We really are serious. We're taking them into consideration for an upcoming request month. And hopefully we'll reach out to one of yours. But I'm curious what you think fits into the mold of, you know, Precocious Kids. And, you know, there'll be a surprise or two along the way, just because Matt Quinn gets to select one too. But I believe I explained this in the last episode, so I won't get into it now. But Thomas, Daniel, me, and Matt each pick one. So you'll get to have a nice kind of wide range of movies and movie choices. Hope you enjoy. Thanks.
Check out what's been going on with the Pop Culture Cosmo Show and the PCC Multiverse.
I see the potential for basically like another Netflix kind of paradigm shift where here comes this other major player. They have a ton of resources. Apple could change the way that entertainment is consumed.
They say it's the only time this year that you'll have stars from each brand battling each other. And we know it's not going to be the case, but they like to say that, and more power to them, I guess.
Well, it's a big first step, bringing all those superheroes together. There were definitely some parts of the movie that I really enjoyed. And then there were some parts that I thought just kind of fell short of expectation.
Part of it has to be something to do with how it's being promoted. And this is a thing where audiences do not agree with critics.
That's the Pop Culture Cosmo Show.
And the PCC Multiverse, every week on the Podcast Radio Network and Apple Podcasts.
And check out the show today on the ESO Network.
Welcome to My Bit of Inner Childhood. This week, we're in week two of our Precocious Kid Month, and after following up with a cute Danny DeVito movie, which I guess you could say, we enter the nightmare world of Casper the Friendly Ghost. I'm Nick Hoffman, host of My Bit of Inner Childhood, and on panel we've got...
Hello, this is Daniel. I watched The Enigma of Casper Hauser. I'm pretty sure I watched the wrong movie.
And I'm an advertiser from Casper Mattresses. Steve-O's on mic over here with absolutely no credentials whatsoever.
This is Kelsey R. Morrow on Twitter.
So, guys, how you doing?
That I've had beer.
Yeah, this was my choice for a Precocious Kid movie. We've got Christina Ricci, a kid ghost, and then a very weird movie. Had anyone else seen this movie before?
Oh, when I was a kid, course. Yeah, I saw it in theaters.
I feel like everyone saw it in the 90s.
Oh my God, I think I own this maybe? I don't know if I'd actually
An action figure from Casper. They released action figures.
And which action figure did you have?
It was one of the uncles. I believe it was Stretch with a vacuum cleaner.
They were like Happy Meal toys, I think.
I think so, yeah.
I didn't go that far. They must have had great marketing for this film, though, because I never saw the cartoon growing up.
It was a Steven Spielberg produced movie. That's marketing in and of itself.
I never saw the cartoon growing up, but I remember being really hyped up about this film.
There was like that Saturday morning cartoon that came out after this that had, I think, Dan Castellaneta in it.
Yeah.
Most people probably hadn't seen the cartoon, though, but you knew this film was like really hyped up. It was going to be a big thing.
I will say the people who saw the cartoon growing up were the cameos that they got.
Yeah.
That's the only reason why you get these weird not-for-kid cameos over and over again.
Like Rodney Dangerfield,
right? Like Father Guido Sarducci. Mm.
Like, what
I'm
kid
going
is
to
all...
be in the Casper movie?
you know what? The kids know they love Father Guido Sarducci.
I'm on the Saturday Night Live. Every kid loves.
And you
loves
say
Saturday
you can't
Night
do
Live.
Accents over there.
I know. Thank you.
I feel like that happens with like all '90s kids movies, though. Like, just people just pop up.
Well,
that
I mean,
you
it was
expect.
All the baby boomers were getting into middle age, so it's like we want to relive our youth.
Which... True.
Well, I mean, we're not going to do this movie. I'm sorry. At least not this month. But Ladybugs is a Rodney movie too, which makes no sense. Have anyone seen Ladybugs?
Is that the
no.
one with nope. him as the like?
Soccer coach.
I've heard of it. I've never seen it.
He's the coach of a girls' soccer team, and it's just Rodney as the coach of a girls' soccer team, and it just kind of it's exactly what it sounds like.
I predict that going very wrong very quickly.
You think?
Yeah.
I was going to come up with a Rodney joke, just not that quick. He got no respect. No respect. Eh, whatever.
I love the cameos in this, though.
Yeah. Well, we should start at the beginning. So
we should.
The opening cameo drive at Casper is Ben Stein reading a will.
Talking about money, of course.
Oh, I still want to win his money.
It wasn't his money, though.
I know it wasn't his money, but Jimmy Kimmel made me believe it was.
Nobody won Ben Stein's money. Nobody.
Weird Al certainly did not. He, in the final round, only answered one question right.
Nobody won Ben Stein's money.
And Ben Stein is reading a will to Kathy Moriarty and Eric Idle must have been putting in a new bathroom.
I'm convinced that Eric Idle's resume, between Nuns on the Run and Spamalot, there's just this giant blank.
But around the same time as, like, maybe a little bit later than when this came out, Eric Idle was the scientist guy in the Figment ride at Disney World.
He was also in the South Park movie as the inventor of the V-chip, if anybody remembers that.
Mm-hmm. Academy Award-winning South Park Bigger, Longer, and Uncut.
Oh, Academy Award nominated, unfortunately.
It didn't win?
It didn't win.
Blame Canada is not an Academy Award-winning
song. Well, that's why there was that episode with Phil Collins going around holding an Oscar going, "Hello, I'm Phil Collins."
Wait a minute. Phil Collins sucks ass.
We have a new drug called Riddle Out.
I quote that all the time. People look at me like, "What are you talking about?" It's called Riddle Out.
Oh, no, everyone. Christina Aguilera bugs go away, right?
That's right.
Steve just has a beef against Phil Collins, guys. It's well known. Mm-hmm.
God damn it, just tell me what's coming in the air tonight.
But so this movie is just montage after montage. So they get the will and the deed, and the deed says on it a rhyme, what is it?
Something about
Buccaneers and buried gold. Whipstaff has a treasure hold or something like
something
that.
Like that.
There's gold in the mansion, we think. Whipstaff has got gold.
So they decide to keep this giant main house that they were going to destroy for no reason. It looks like the house out of, I thought Dark Shadows, which came after this.
It looks like a cross between the Saltaire Pavilion and Carnival of Souls and the Beetlejuice house.
I was going to say the Beetlejuice. This movie wants to be a Tim Burton movie very badly.
Oh, very badly.
They show up at the house, they turn the lights on, and that's when we get ghosts for the first time.
Can I interrupt, Nick?
I mean, you did.
Yes, I know I did. I figured I'd try to be polite.
You got the floor. Take it away.
I wrote this plot in haiku form. Do I have your permission to go through that?
I don't know if we want to hear this.
Aw, you don't trust me?
All right, go ahead. Okay. I give you permission.
The ghost in the house, horny for the teenage girl, yet has no penis. Three evil uncles want to scare everybody. Bad puns are scary. Monty Python's Eric suffers under his bad boss. Gets his hand burned once. The woman known for Raging Bull forgot that she worked with Scorsese. Inherits big house. Thinks treasure is inside it, but it's got ghosts there. Sends Ghostbuster in. He comes back out. Job not done. Likely still got paid.
Soiled his career.
She watches TV. Hard copy is on. Remember that? We meet Bill Pullman. Girl's dad obsessed with his dead wife. Goes on ghost hunts. Ends up briefly dead. Casper gives up his chance at coming back alive. Still comes back to life. Kisses girl. Turns back into ghost. Says boo. Screaming. Audience wants death. Massive plot holes make me think about life and death, much existential.
Ladies and gentlemen, Daniel.
That was
I think that's the end of the episode, guys.
That was great.
How can we add to that?
I guess
I got so bored watching the movie. That's just how my brain started working right there.
And I mean, okay, so for those of you who don't know, I mean, most of you don't, I hope, because that would mean you're just in the group, but when we put these together, I'm the host. I usually pick the movies, so we're doing it a little bit differently this time. And then we open it up to our regular panelists to see who can do this movie. There were so many times that this movie where people were like, I love Casper. And I'm like, guys, you're wrong.
Yeah.
No, you're wrong.
This is one giant plot hole of a movie.
It's not good.
It's got a great set, though. They did a great job with the set.
So? It's not used well?
Well, I mean, and
but it's they've got lots of great stained glass in this movie.
I'm going to hold back Daniel's dog here for just one second and say this movie had all the potential in the world. It clearly had a budget. Like the special effects aren't bad, but then they don't use them to any good effect. They clearly built an interesting set and they just didn't use it. They clearly had people lining up to do cameos and it clearly didn't matter. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that they did, which bothers me, it's something that you notice in The Simpsons, okay? If you ever watch the old Simpsons, the lip syncing is really good. And then all of a sudden, when the lip syncing is bad and it's a crappy joke, the reason is, first you pitch the joke, then you write the joke, then you rewrite the joke, and then you rewrite the joke, and then they animate it, and then the voice actors read it. And then sometimes after hearing it 10 times, it's no longer good, so they change it last minute. That's what every single one of the Ghostly Trio's jokes remind me of, because the mouths stop moving, and then they make a joke. So you realize they just recorded 20 different jokes, and they picked one.
Wait, those are the ones they picked?
Those are the ones they picked.
Which ones did they reject?
A lot of
slurs. We probably don't even want to know.
Oh, God.
There were racial and homophobic slurs, they got rid of most of them.
Well, Brad Garrett was one of the ghosts, so that makes sense.
Yeah, Brad Garrett's kind of a putz, but that's okay.
Hey, now.
Seinfeld once said something to the effect of, to be a good comedian, you need to write 1,000 jokes and then throw away 999 of them.
Yeah. What's the deal with that?
They didn't get to 1,000.
No.
And they just said, fuck it, pull one out of a hat. This is the joke now.
Yeah, and then you're like, there's a Flicka joke. 1995, it's a Flicka joke.
There's a Father Guido Sarducci joke, okay, and it's 1995.
So let's get there. They pull up to Whipstaff Manor, and we get a Jurassic Park joke, because they pull up in a Jeep in the rain, in the mud, and then he has to open the gate by hand, which is what the fat guy does to escape from Jurassic Park. So we have a reference to Jurassic Park in the first 10 minutes.
Did we mention this movie's produced by Steven Spielberg?
Which is a Spielberg thing. Okay. Then second, when the ghosts show up, they try to get rid of the ghosts. So we have Father Guido Sarducci, who tries to perform an exorcism, and they turn his spine around.
Now, what's up with this? This is a kid's movie, and they send a Catholic priest in there. He comes out covered in vomit and with his spine turned around. What child's going to get that?
This is Shrek syndrome before Shrek, of course. But
Shrek did it better.
Well, right, but that's what it is. It's making the movie for adults, but written for kids. Okay? And then we get the one that really stuck with me and really depressed me, which is Ghostbusters 3. Oh, Dan Aykroyd shows up.
The Steven slightly
still
fatter.
Has Stan's name tag on.
He's literally wearing his Universal Studio Ray Stans outfit. Mm-hmm. And he goes, who are you going to call? Someone else. That's it. They saved the town New York. And this little Manor ghost beats them. This is it. This is awful. Sorry, we're good. We got to move ahead.
Well, then there's that construction crew, and the villainous really reminds me of like a cross between Faye Dunaway and Catherine O'Hara's character in Beetlejuice. It's not good.
She reminds me of in The Nanny, the Cece.
Oh,
nanny.
The blonde.
Yeah.
She does. And I thought it was Madeline Kahn at first.
Just, oh, no.
Well, I mean, it's the same type, right?
Madeline Kahn had a little more self-respect.
You'd hope.
I would hope,
you did. Anyway, so regardless, she did what she should. Well, first of all, this is a beautiful mansion on the coast in Maine.
That's like, somehow condemned.
This should be a bed and breakfast. They'd make their money back just selling it. Which reminds me, there'd be a great version of Property Brothers where they try to flip haunted houses.
Ooh, I like that.
Very Halloween special right there.
I'm the handsome brother who's the real estate agent. I'm the chud of a brother who's equally handsome who's the contractor.
These two brothers aren't to flip a house, but will the house flip them?
Speaking of, he makes a cameo later in this movie.
Yes, he does.
The Crypt Keeper.
He does. Yeah, when he's looking in the mirror.
And he makes a Home Alone reference 4 years later.
No, I thought that was a Poltergeist reference.
No, he slaps his cheeks and goes, ah! like Kevin does from Home Alone.
I just thought the whole mirror guy looking in the mirror bit and his face starts changing was a bit from Poltergeist, you know?
He didn't pull his face apart, though.
That would have been better.
Oh, no, it was a Michael Jackson Man in the Mirror reference.
Oh, there you go.
Make that anyway, change.
So, Casper... Okay. The whole thing about Casper is he's lonely and he wants to have sex with a teenager.
Well, because he's 12, which...
Whatever.
1200.
Well, this is an Anne Rice character, really, because he's stuck in a 12-year-old state of being, but he's really, like, what, 72, 80? I think we did the math on that.
Yeah, he dies in, like, Victorian England or something.
Except his favorite ball... Well, no, I thought he died in the 50s because of that whole thing with the ball player.
Oh, the... Okay, so the continuity makes no sense, but he dies later. Spoiler alert, he dies, and he's a ghost now.
Well, I mean, it's Casper the Friendly Ghost. Yeah.
Wait, if you don't know that, then... Wait, he dies? No.
Yeah, so Richie Rich dies and becomes Casper the Friendly Ghost.
I'd buy it.
Anyway, so reminding us that this movie was made in 1990, Casper is watching Hard Copy one night. And on Hard Copy, they interview a ghost hunter played by Bill Pullman with a daughter named Christina Ricci.
Seeing him in this, back in the early 2000s, Comedy Central used to rerun SNL from the 90s all the time, and Bill Pullman hosted one back then. And during his monologue, he's like, you know, sometimes you just want to do a movie where you get to kick some ass. And that's why I signed up to do Casper. Huge, huge applause.
That makes zero sense.
It was his comedy monologue on SNL. So.
Well, I mean, because the next year he's the president in Independence Day.
Mm-hmm. And that's what a Lodestar. I mean,
and he kind of kicks ass as Lone Star.
He does kick ass. He gets
is
a big
it Lone
short.
Star or Lodestar?
Lone Star.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. The guy with the big shorts.
That's. I mean, he's fine in that movie.
He's great. I love that film.
Go ahead, Steve. I'm sorry.
I've got nothing important to say. He's Robin Williams light in this movie.
He is. And that's actually the perfect way to put it. Yeah. So Hard Copy, for those of you who don't know, it's a show that exactly lined up with the Clinton administration, I think. But what it was it was kind of schlocky news done in a very tabloid style.
So Fox News, basically.
No, but it was more, but more Entertainment Tonight-y. Like, it like followed around people. And that's kind of the thing.
Didn't
like
George Clooney sue them at one point?
That might have been what killed them. It ended at 99. Oh, so, regardless, so Casper's watching Hard Copy like America watched Hard Copy. It was like on after The Simpsons or something. Like it was just on TV.
Back then, there was like three options during that time slot. It was Cops, Hard Copy, and Jerry Springer.
Something like that. And what ends up happening is they find Bill Pullman, and he's someone who's like whose wife has died. And now he's helping ghosts. He's like a ghost psychologist, which again is also very like Ghostbusters because they're all like PhDs in psychology, which is stupid. Well, this is all stupid.
The only thing they said about it is that ghosts are here because they have, quote, unfinished business, but they never really defined what that meant.
Well, because it's Ghost 101. It's just shorthand for meaning nothing.
Well, it was very confusing at the end, which we'll get to later.
It was a very convenient... inconsistent plot device.
What was Stinky's unfinished business? Just buy him Smack's body spray and he goes to heaven. There you go.
Yeah, he had to stink up the place. They got shots to throw back. Don't worry about Stinky.
Smackagram!
Well, see, like, what I think it is, honestly, is he's not a ghost, he's a demon, and they just haven't clarified the difference. He doesn't go to heaven at the end of this, so he's just sticking around. That's what he is. He's the demon of wet farts.
Oh.
Anyway, yikes. So Hard Copy... other than stalking around this girl on her first day of school, which we get, Casper sees this, immediately falls in love with Christina Ricci, and then follows like the cable, like the coax, into Catherine Moriarty's hotel room to turn her TV onto Hard Copy and then have the TV chase her into the bathroom.
Mm. Get me Santa Fe.
And so...
Actual line from this movie.
It is. This is not... He's not quoting Rent. He's quoting Casper. Anyway, so at this point, I wrote down two things in my notes, which is that Bill Pullman is a con man, because if he was actually a ghost psychologist, he could just stay in a major town. So the fact that he's moving all the time is very suspicious. And then second is, God, I'd kill for a plot.
I was just distracted by how the ghosts were so inconsistent in this movie. I mean...
Oh, no. Sorry. Go ahead. Casper has the line, God, I'd kill for a pinky.
Oh, yeah.
Because he has only four fingers. I'm sorry, go ahead.
And Bart Simpson's just going, fuck you, Casper.
Yeah, because that's a Simpsons joke.
It was so weird how they never explained how ghosts work. I mean, at times they're like banging their heads on bedposts when they're frustrated, like Casper was in that one scene, and other times they're like, you know, phasing through walls and doing the whole ghost thing. So is being a solid object in this universe like a conscious choice that the ghost makes? Or
yes.
How does that work?
It is. Physics need not apply, as you pointed out.
Well, then how's the pillow out scene
yeah,
work?
And like the wringing out water.
Well, and then at one point, when they're making breakfast, he literally pours the orange juice through his hand and pulls the pulp out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How? Because bowel movements are for suckers.
Why do they have breakfast? Why are these ghosts eating? They're dead. They have no stomach.
They eat to literally crap on the floor. Piles of food.
It goes straight through them onto the floor, and there's a whole scene where they get yelled at about making a mess on the floor because they're indulgent, ghostly bastards.
So this is really a ghost remake of Fellini's Satyricon?
Yeah, that's it. That's what they were going for.
That's pretty much it. All right.
So at this point, we have, first of all, the 90s show back up in Christina Ricci, forehead and all. Mm-hmm. She is dressed like the 90s.
I literally have a note, the dance of the foreheads. This is the end of the movie.
Oh, man. Okay, but like, 90s fashion is like starting to come back though. So some of the things that she wears, like kids would wear today.
I at one point Googled Christina Ricci, and then I was like, she should get bangs, and she has bangs now. So good for her.
Oh yeah,
her.
I've
good
seen those pictures. Yeah.
But
when was the last time she was in a movie?
She's probably in things a lot, actually.
I can't remember her being in anything after that movie with Samuel L. Jackson in it.
Monster?
Black Snake Moan,
excuse me.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't even remember that. She was Wednesday Addams and Casper's girlfriend.
Oh my God.
That's it for me.
Do they change IMDb based on what you're searching? Is it like Google? Because when I looked her up, it said known for Casper.
Oh God.
And she's Wednesday Addams, of course. She was in Buffalo 66.
Yes, she was.
She's been in something every year.
Oh, she was in that Pan Am TV series that lasts like all of 3 episodes.
She was in a TV series called the Lizzie Borden Chronicles.
Oh, of course.
Whoa.
As she played Lizzie Borden, so she cut someone up with an axe.
Why are we not watching that right now?
Oh my God, there was a TV movie beforehand called Lizzie Borden Took an Axe, where she was also Lizzie Borden, and she's in the Smurfs, so there you go.
Oh, the Smurfs.
Gross. Anyway, so this is where Casper starts skeezing heavily on Christina Ricci.
There's a girl in my bed.
She faints, or after becoming the pillow and him getting punched around, because he's into that, she faints when she sees that he's an actual ghost. So he soaks up some water, wrings himself out on her face, and we get this kind of weird, like, ghost squeezing, like, screaming kind of montage. And he gets the kind of depressing line, all I needed was a friend, and then you realize that he'd be an incel in real life today.
Probably.
At this point, he kind of reveals himself to Bill Pullman, and we get the second montage.
Well, don't the uncles, or what he calls his uncles, show up at this point, too?
They do. Well, they've showed up before, but this is where they're kind of formally introduced, right? They scare Bill Pullman, he collapses, and they all pile in his body, and they've got, you know, the first of many fatso jokes. He's a fat ghost. He can't fit in things.
Yeah.
It's Brad Garrett from Everybody Loves Raymond.
Brad Garrett. I miss Ray. Ray was great.
And we get the montage here. This is where we get Clint Eastwood, where he says, "Yo mama.
I'll shoot your mama and everybody in a bridge game or something."
Do you have these written down, Steve?
I don't have the quotes written down, no.
We get Rodney Dangerfield, who actually gets a line in because he's Rodney and he can be funny in 6 words. We get Mel Gibson, who just sits there looking handsome because he got a paycheck because he was a good-looking dude. And then we get the Crypt Keeper doing a scream from Home Alone.
Yeah.
And then you realize that everyone wanted to be a part of this movie, and this is the garbage they ended up with.
Why not? Did we mention that this movie was written by, like, the staff writers of Animaniacs?
There's no reason it shouldn't have worked.
I know.
It also should have been animated.
Yeah.
This is also where we get our first of many gay jokes, where he gets called a closet. There's just something about that feels so 80s.
There's this random bit where we somehow get an Apocalypse Now joke and a dick joke all within the span of 2 seconds.
Do you have them? I don't remember.
Oh, yeah. There's that bit where they're coming to breakfast and they're singing Flight of the Valkyries, and then I think it's the not stinky, not fatso, but the other one.
Stretch.
Says something like, I love the smell of fleshies in the morning. And I'm just like, gross. Okay.
But that's what I mean. Like, everyone in the writing room made a joke, and then they just roll the 12-sided die to see whose joke made it in the movie. Because it's not even it can't be the best. That can't be the best joke they came up with.
No, bone bags, meat bags. They had like four terms.
Flesh puppets.
Okay, but maybe we're giving them too
no,
much
No, flesh
credit.
Puppets
maybe
is too much credit.
That was the best joke
You're
that
right.
they came up with, yeah. and we don't want to know what the other ones were.
Flesh puppets is way better. I'm going to write
you
down
say
flesh
there's
puppets.
Like an NC-17 version of Casper out there?
I'd
there's
watch
a director's
it.
Cut.
I'd
and
watch it.
It's like the... See, but like... Okay, so the first unrated version of a movie I ever saw, this is so stupid, was The Wedding Crashers. Remember The Wedding Crashers? It was Vince Vaughn and Owen Wilson.
Wow, we're going to go to this wedding.
And there was, so it's an R-rated movie because there's a montage at the beginning where like eight women flop down on the bed topless.
The really random thing I remember in that movie is... during that montage, it like ends with this woman who was still wearing her bra, like going, "Do you remember my name? Are you just full of shit?" And then she gets up and you know
and leaves. Yeah.
Well, she's not wearing anything else. It's like, why did you keep the bra on?
Yeah, that was it. And the unrated version had one extra F-bomb and two extra women without tops on.
Okay,
that's it. And like, so I imagine you're right. There's another version of it that has. Racy jokes, but it's just two racy jokes that would have made it PG-13 because I don't think they even thought that far ahead.
Well, there's that one bit I think when they're on the vacuum after Bill Pullman sucks them up, which again kind of a dirty joke there.
Yeah,
where somebody says your head is poking me and I think it's Brad Garrett who goes
that's not my head.
Yeah. What gross. It's all gross.
I know it doesn't work in this context.
I don't know. I'm just going to keep going because why not?
Yeah, just keep going.
Because like, okay, so there's breakfast. There's a breakfast scene where Casper's made them like a short stack and eggs and like meat and brings him a newspaper from Taiwan or whatever, like the joke is.
Yeah.
And then the ghostly trio show back up and they're assholes and they ruin everything. Casper brings them out plates of like cookies and donuts and cakes and they eat them and they just end up leaving these piles of brown crap on the floor. In the one scene that I remembered verbatim from when I was a kid. It's disgusting.
Oh, that bit about how this floor used to be dirty enough to eat off?
Yeah. But it just makes no sense. Like, none of this makes sense. They don't need to eat. Why are they eating?
That's what I was saying.
Like, I'm not arguing with you. It's just frustrating. There's not answers to any of this.
They make a big deal out of it, too.
Maybe
there's
they
a scene
just...
beforehand where they're like yelling at Casper, like, where's our damn food?
Yeah.
Maybe they just miss the taste of food.
How can they taste it?
I don't know.
Actually, but she's right. They might be able to taste it. We have no idea how this world works.
And they just can't digest it. Well, I mean, have
Casper
you ever been a ghost before?
Casper
no,
can wring
know.
Water out on a girl's face. You think they can't taste cookies?
This movie is weirdly sexual the whole time. Like,
it is.
Well, right Casper's after the breakfast scene, right after the breakfast scene, we get that bit where they rip off Roger Rabbit, where Bill Pullman tells the trio about his dead wife, and they say, oh, yeah, we can totally get her for you. Usually involves a bunch of like red tape, but we can do it. And then Fatso puts on that dress and goes, my man.
Yeah.
So not only is it a Roger Rabbit ripoff, it's a very, very weird joke just to land right there.
At this point, we get a scene back in middle school and she ends up being in like this. She ends up doing like, I was never a new kid. But they don't, like, parade you in the front of school. And they're just like, so you're new. Let's make you feel uncomfortable. You're 14. How's puberty going? Like, what's going on up there?
How's puberty going? Oh, it's going great.
It's going great.
I found another hair under my armpit last night.
Am I comfortable and sweaty?
That makes three.
Girls are making me weird. Girls are confusing. But they bring her to the front of the classroom, and her name is Kat. And the cool blonde girl goes meow.
The one who's directly from the Addams Family Values. The cool blonde girl that was making fun of Wednesday, and then Wednesday ends up killing her. You remember that bit?
I do remember that bit. I she looks like someone from Mean Girls.
Yeah, she totally does.
Anyway. She comes back later, kind of. None of this movie matters. It's...
Oh, there was another thing about this that really raised alarm bells with me. Because the whole thing is that they find out she lives in that mansion and they don't know where to hold the big school dance.
No.
So at first the blonde girl volunteers her lake house, I think.
Yeah.
And then they all decide, oh, hey, she lives in a creepy mansion. Let's do it there without really asking her permission. And all I'm thinking at this point, not only are they not asking permission, it's like, oh, they're planning a party. The popular kids want to play a prank on this young girl. And she's got connections to the supernatural. That sounds very familiar. Am I the only one there?
Like Carrie?
Exactly, like Carrie.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that bothered me more is like, these kids are and then the teacher's just like, yeah, we'll show up at your house.
Yeah, I mean, they're really looking to do this at Whipstaff, though, right? Like, but really, asbestos-covered gym? I can't think of anything spookier.
I mean,
to it, kids.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, though, if our house was a 19th century, like, horror mansion like this, everything would be... We'd have a barbecue on, like, a haunted skull. Like, oh, why totally. Not?
That's true.
Why aren't we doing that right now?
I mean, the skull's busy. It's showing up as an extra in a Tyler Perry movie.
Next event.
Yeah, next All event. Right. Next time.
Did anyone have a Halloween-themed dance in high school?
No.
Yes.
Really? No kidding.
Yeah.
Go on.
Well, I mean, but I went to school in California, and it was a private school, so we were probably weird.
No, I mean, like, we had, like, three dances, just not... One was not, like, Halloween.
Our homecoming was always close to Halloween, and so we would have, like, a theme, and so they would usually do it so that it was connected.
As a Halloween.
Yeah.
No, I mean, we our homecomings were usually very, like, homecoming. The Sadie Hawkins dance in the spring was the one that was always a theme.
We had, I think, all of our, with the exception of prom, all of our dancers had themes.
Really?
Yeah.
Hey, good on you guys. Speaking of, okay, we'll get to this, but the teacher that hosts this is a really creepy guy. He shows up with, like, lobster claws. He's like, pinchy, pinchy. And he's, like making, like, little pinch gestures at kids.
This is before me, too.
He's got no control of this class whatsoever.
That's how you greet me every time I see you, Nick.
Yeah, pinchy, pinchy.
It's true.
And he was the first one to applaud when the girl runs into, like, the lights and falls over. And he's just like, yeah, concussions are hilarious.
Well, they are, let's be honest.
Football! But, no, I mean, this teacher guy is just way too into everything. He's move it from the gymnasium to this girl's house on her first day.
Right?
Do we see him after this scene? I don't remember.
He's at the party.
Okay.
I don't know why.
By that point, I had just given up, so.
I made him Macho Man Randy Savage.
Macho Man.
Everyone had a joke at once.
Bill Pullman is most definitively not going to be a macho man in this movie.
The ghosts always rise to the top.
Oh,
ooh, yeah, brother, I got some unfinished business to take care of.
I mean, we can get to the end. Like, at one point...
We can just skip ahead.
Well, I mean, like, okay, skip so eventually he literally tries to do a psych session with the ghost, so they turn it around on him. Like, they're lying on a couch.
This was the closest Animaniac scene in the entire movie.
This is very Dr. Scratch and Sniff. And he's like, you know, and they're like, so you're supposed to have unfinished business. And, like, they're like... And then it turns into frat boys. Well, our unfinished business is getting you drunk.
Yeah.
They go out partying, which is crazy because... I'm pretty sure at this point Kat has told him that there's a party at the house. And so he's just like, 30 kids in my house, I'm getting out. And he's right.
Okay, for me, this is where the movie got really weird really quickly.
Go ahead.
No, I'm just in general, because then we go from a movie that's got some semblance of direction, not a great direction, but they kind of are building up these uncles and they're sort of, you know, building this high school chamber drama type of thing.
Yeah.
And then suddenly they've got like a casual murder, a casual death, this weird Lazarus machine they just throw into the mix, and they're like, all right, movie's over, guys.
Yeah, no. Okay, so step one, Casper, like, one of the things apparently that when you die is you forget everything. And Casper, Wednesday Addams, discovers his room from when he was a kid and starts setting up the toys. And this is the scene that seems to me the most Tim Burton-y. Like, it could be Big Fish, to Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Like, there's all these weird old school toys running around. And then Casper gets this look in his eyes like, I remember. And you're just like, different movie. Like, this is supposed to be a romp with a kid ghost, and all of a sudden we're talking about demise. The next 10 minutes is literally about death, like grim death.
He describes how he dies.
And it's a Dickensian nightmare. I wanted this sled for so long. My father got it for me, and I sled it all day. And then it got cold, and then it got dark. And you're just like, oh my God.
Well, we skipped
kids
over.
Movie.
Yeah.
We skipped really? Over what was definitively the creepiest part, I think, for Nick, which was, first, there's that cute boy that Christina Ricci is trying to hook up with.
Oh, my God.
And this is when Casper, like, takes her to that lighthouse so she can see the ocean, and then they go to bed together. That's literally what happens. And then that's where the Casper's, like, spooning her at one point, and then he, like, whispers in her ear, like,
are you can gonna... I keep you?
Yeah, that's it.
Is this before or after his attempted murder?
No, this is right
this
before
is after.
This yeah. is right before the room scene where they find all the toys.
Yeah, no, this is they have the romantic moment. They look into each other's eyes, and he's like, "Can you hurt me?" And she goes, " Can you hurt me?" And he goes, "I couldn't hurt you." And it's very clear he could have let her die. And you get this, like, the light behind his eyes is like, "I could make her a ghost too, and then she'd be mine forever." And you're just like, This is where the uncles need to step in and say no. The uncles.
This is where the guys that
the
are
uncles become the moral center.
Yeah, the ones following Bill around all movie, trying to stab him with broken bottles.
This is where Casper's pretty much going. This is where Casper's pretty much going. It puts the lotion on its skin. It does what it's told, or else it gets the hose.
I think Casper is just as dark and creepy as the other uncles, but he's trying to kill you with kindness.
But here's the thing, like, Casper just wants a friend. It's really easy to get kids to like you. You're a ghost. Like, pull a prank on the teacher, you're the star of the school. He's 12, 13. You could do that. Like, it's not like it's crazy. But, like, instead the girl's falling asleep in bed. He curls up behind her and goes, "Can I keep you?" And you're just like, thanks,
and
Ted
she goes,
Bundy.
Well, she goes,
But I mean, the thing that creeps me out here is not that, it's that the rest of the movie feels so slapdash that there was probably no line on a script. The director's just like, get in bed, Casper's going to do something we just don't know what yet. And so on the movie premiere night, she was just like, can I keep you? Wait, really? 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 Ugh, gross. All of this is gross. Anyway... the ghostly trio take him out drinking in what I think it might be my favorite scene of the movie, because he's just getting schnockered. He is shit hammered. And he's doing karaoke, singing to himself, and the ghostly trio is absolutely in love with him.
Well, they want to kill him to make themselves a quartet.
Yeah, they're like, we want him to stay around forever. Like, I've been to those parties that you don't want to end. We're just like, they're hitting up bars, people are terrified of them, except for there's this one guy who's passed out on the bar.
That almost gets shot and stabbed, but that guy was a trooper.
He's like a key grip or something. There's just a teamster who's passed out head down holding a bud. And he gets shot.
If you touch the teamster while he's passed out drunk, that's a union violation. Or whatever union he's a member of.
You get three wishes.
whatever union he's a member of. The teamsters are fine people. The
teamster union's a good union.
But here's the thing. This is the best. Like, this is a scene where I understand all the characters. Pullman realizes he's a sham. And just kind of washes up on the shore of Mount Drunky. And, like, the ghostly trio are supporting him in this. They get to make their jokes, and they're falling in love with the guy. This is a scene where everyone's motivation makes sense. This is the only place I have to hang my hat the whole movie, where I'm not supporting, a molester or a potential serial killer. You get the feeling that there was a whole bunch of other girls who just didn't see Casper's way, and they ended up down the cliff, which Kathy Moriarty is about to go down.
Already gone down that cliff, actually.
Girl.
She did.
Yeah,
it was such a casual murder.
Yeah, Eric Idle kills her.
You're right. It was like this weird slapstick chase scene where she ends up falling off of a cliff just casually dead. But that's fine.
Do you remember this bit, Kelsey, when that woman died?
She's...
I think so.
Well, I mean, here's what it is. The last act is a crowded scene satire. Everyone shows up at once. So the middle school scene, which has been established once, they show up for the party, right? Everyone's in costume, and Kat's like, oh no, my costume! At which point Casper dresses her up in one of his mother's nightgowns, which is also a really weird Freudian scene.
Really creepy. Oh, yeah.
Right? Because it's like this lace, high-collared, long-sleeve thing. It's like, this was my mother's. I'm like, all right, Ed Gein, we're good. We're good, Ed. We're good, little Eddie. The ghostly trio have taken Bill Pullman out to get drunk, and spoiler alert, he's about to fall to the core of the earth because after...
positioned right outside the bar.
What was up with that?
He falls like...
End scene.
And like they're trying to kill him because they want him to join the group, and then they feel guilty because they like him so much that they're like, we couldn't possibly kill this old bone bag, and then he falls to the core of the earth.
Yeah.
Well, either way, they decide to murder Kathy Moriarty.
No, what happens is Kathy Moriarty is like, well, we found this giant safe. We don't know what's in it.
So let's back up and talk about the Lazarus machine.
Please,
for a
go
second.
Ahead. We skipped a step.
Yeah, so they've discovered this Lazarus machine because Casper's dad was an inventor. Casper had died, and his dad became kind of Mr. Freeze-esque, obsessed with bringing him back to life.
That's right? A good example.
Yeah, so he's developed this machine that can bring a ghost back to its corporeal form, but you need this bottle of primordial ooze that they don't explain. So... Casper and Kat discover this Lazarus machine, and they keep trying to use it on Casper, and obviously they keep getting interrupted. And this is when we are looking at
Kathy Moriarty and Eric Idle.
Yeah, Eric Idle and Kathy are looking to, scheme with this thing, because of course they're looking for this safe, and they can't get into the safe. So their idea is, of course, I'm going to kill myself, turn into a ghost, get in there, grab the loot, and go, and then we'll use the Lazarus machine, and I'll be corporeal again, and everything will be just perfect.
And scene. Like, that's as far as they think. And then they have this kind of, like, Three Stooges bit where they're like, well, you're going to be the one to die. And he's like, you're going to be the one to die. And... after nearly killing each other, Kathy Moriarty thinks she's gotten away with it and then falls to her grim death by falling down a cliff.
Yeah.
Now, here's something I didn't get. She immediately comes back.
Really? A plot hole?
Yes. One of many. She immediately comes back from that. She's retained all of her memories, which they've already established isn't what happens when you die.
Yep.
And just keeps on trucking. How?
Well, and the other thing is, they give her boobs, which is really weird. Kathy Moriarty, like, everyone else has this weird kind of, like, drippy sock puppet thing. And Kathy Moriarty not only has hair and clothing, but they give her, like, crazy cleavage.
Oh, that was in her contract.
I'm sure. But then, as we alluded to a minute ago, Bill Pullman, who falls to the core of the earth and then dies when he gets eaten by, like, Anubis or the River Styx or something.
The Sarlacc?
He falls into a Sarlacc pit, and after 1,000 years of digestion, he resurrects into a new movie. Like Boba Fett in 2020 or whatever the nightmare is going to be.
Oh.
But he ends up with his glasses, brown hair, and his green cardigan.
That was a sweet cardigan.
I mean,
it was a nice cardigan.
He ends up in Flanders through time, man. And that's why...
Flanders is ghost.
Yeah. Oh, Daniel is my Ed McMahon. So we have this kind of like weird situation where, again, a second credit scene satire where all the like the antagonists and protagonists are in one room while the extras are having a dance party in the other room.
Bill is still drunk as a ghost, by the way, which is fantastic.
He forgets
everything.
That makes sense because we've already established when you die, you lose all your memories. So that's fine.
Although apparently he's just drunk because the second Kat grabs his finger in a pinky swear, which happened once before.
But what did we establish that? Because Kerrigan didn't lose her memories.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. It makes no sense.
I'm telling
Fair.
You. Bill is just drunk.
Bill is drunk.
And then he wakes up, he's like, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit. Well, like, what did I do?
Do we mention that bit, by the way, where Eric Idle, like, he gets the chest that supposedly contains the treasure, which Spoiler, it's a baseball glove and a signed baseball. That's all that was in there from a Brooklyn Dodgers player.
And it's Casper. It's Casper's treasure. Right. Like, and so what it is, it's what a little kid would treasure. It's a signed baseball and a glove. And it's a cute thing, but then they lose their shit. It's right. Like if Indiana Jones got the idol and it was just covered in, it was just chocolate covered in gold. And he was like, what is this? He goes, it's the Easter Bunny I left out for you, Mr. Jones.
Well, the whole thing with Eric Idle is he's holding this chest. And he's refusing to give it up to the ghost. He's like, I'm going to live in a big house with this treasure. I'm going to have a dog, and she's going to be a bitch like you.
Purple wallpaper and big green carpeting.
He gets kicked out of a window.
He gets punched right through
the window. He is not a ghost by the end of this, I don't know.
Because he has no unfinished business. He got to tell Kathy Moriarty to go to hell, and he wins.
Well, that's how they defeat
him. Yeah, you're right. There's this whole spiel where they kind of imply like this is purgatory, where they say Casper, because Casper is describing how he died, and he's saying, I was supposed to go somewhere, it didn't feel right, but then I got stuck somewhere, and now I'm a ghost. And it was, you know, kind of vaguely implying, like, I was going to go to heaven, but then I didn't, and now I'm a ghost for reasons.
Well, he specifically said, if I recall, that he didn't go because he didn't want his dad to feel lonely.
Which, I mean, fine, but his dad's dead now, so he should have disappeared.
Well, I mean, it's also why the whole thing with his wife showing up at the end made no sense, because she's like, goes, I was so well loved by you. I had no unfinished business. They're grieving over you many years later. Your ex-husband has gone crazy.
Well, I mean, and that's the only attempt by the writer to be like, this world makes no sense. Because, like, if that was the rules, there would be no... there would be, like, only ghosts, right? Because, right. Like, the idea that you die... like, only hobos who die alone would go to heaven. Right, everyone else would be ghosts because you're always leaving someone behind.
That would be poetic justice.
And the hobos rule the heavens. I also love the idea of like you're in the Publix and you can't just help but run into goddamn ghosts everywhere. Like you're just wall to wall ghosts.
I'm waiting for the next sale on those grab and go sandwiches.
My unfinished business is that Persil didn't go on sale before I died, and then the next time Persil goes on sale, whoop, I'm off to the afterlife.
My unfinished business is I could never get this goddamn self-checkout machine to work.
Then you're going to be waiting for a very long time. Those things are evil.
By the way, the ending of this movie has his dead wife Amelia coming back as an angel for like a couple hours.
Oh, not even. So, other than my second to last comment, which is just boobs, comma, dress.
That's your second to last comment to practically everything you do.
It was very awkward, but it was Terminator. But here's the thing. We end up ending on the middle school dance where the blonde who's like in her 20s but pretending to be in middle school is on the shoulders of the jock that Christina Ricci has a thing for. Mm-hmm. And like they're supposed to be like a ghostly figure, and then one of the ghostly trio scares them, and she ends up running. Like there's a spook, there's a boogan,
there is a boo,
and they run through, everyone applauds.
Oh, also, just for reference, they recover they get the laser machine working, but Casper decides to give it up to Christina Ricci's ghost dad instead of using it on himself.
And so, instead of becoming Bill Cosby, he becomes Bill Pullman.
Yeah.
Ghost dad.
Yeah, I know. Okay. I was hoping nobody would go there after I said that. But
and just for wrong. A little more context, at this party, MC Dracula is spinning it.
Oh my God!
So we know.
I would love an Almost Famous style movie with MC Dracula trying to like track him as he goes through his coke binge in the 80s because he's way too old to be doing high school parties. But this is his gig. He's a paralegal on Wednesday, but Thursday night.
I'm just picturing Count Von Count as a DJ. One remix. Two remix.
Three. Let the ladies hit the floor.
Four. Now it's time we do Cupid Shuffle.
Russian Dracula now.
Essentially, at this point, Kat's mom shows up as an angel because she said, there's no way I'm doing CGI. And she was played by Andy Serkis in a mocap suit. But Casper, she gives Casper one wish, which is to become human for like 30 minutes until 10 o'clock.
Maybe 30 minutes. It was like 10 and a half minutes.
And he goes, hey, Cinderella got Dominion. And she goes, you shut your mouth, otherwise you're going straight to hell, kid.
Ho, 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 Cinderella wasn't 12. See you in 10 minutes.
Don't feel up my daughter, comma.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that is a line later, isn't it?
And so they're dancing. He goes, hey, I'm Casper. And this, like, I mean, this toe-headed kid comes up and starts dancing with her. It's very romantic, and they started floating. Like everyone's first dance with a significant other, you start floating away, and then everyone stares at you, screams, and leaves the building.
Yeah,
that didn't happen to you?
I mean, they did. She just stuck around. Anyway, I mean, the movie, and then the movie just ends with a guitar solo. Yeah.
of the theme song.
Play us out, uncles.
The friendly ghost. And then
yeah, like, this is the song that's consistent with their attitude towards being ghosts, right?
I mean, the thing about the whole thing is the tempo changes of this movie. Like, there's a Casper movie that's just fun and very kiddish, and, like, it could be just a, like, him and Christina Ricci, and it could be just precocious kids, and she's trying to help him make friends, and he's trying to help her find friends in this new school. They don't do that. There's an adult movie that's like more like PG-13 with the ghostly trio making crude jokes. They don't do that. Like, none of these movies come together to anything. It's the most bizarre, like, everyone had ideas, and all of them ended up in the movie, but because they wanted it to be 93 minutes so it could be a kid's movie, they just cut out anything that mattered, so it just ended up being very rapey feeling.
They had one job.
They had one job! They tried to resurrect this movie, I guess no pun intended, for a ghost movie. They tried to resurrect it for 1994, '95. And what they ended up with, this should have stayed dead. It should never come back.
Did you just throw Pet Cemetery at
us? I did.
Better ghost movie.
Better movie. Let's just go around the table this way. Would you recommend this to anyone?
I mean, if you've seen it once, that's pretty much all. That...
Leave it in the past.
Yeah.
I get you. Stevie.
If they opened up this set for you to go and tour it yourself, I would say check it out. Otherwise, avoid this movie. It's not very good.
I'm going to pause for a minute to point to you. There's a sequence where to go to the Lazarus machine, which we didn't talk about.
Oh, yeah. There's the, like, Up and Atom machine.
There's the Up and Atom machine, which is something out of like Wallace and Gromit, where you get in this chair, exactly. You get breakfast, you get shaved, you get like cologned. You're right. This house is something to see if you could see it, because to me, this is Universal Studios trying to make a Haunted Mansion ride.
That was my exact thought, actually. And I'm surprised they haven't done something to that effect, because the Up and Atom machine would be a very cool, like, immersive, right? You're sitting in, like, and that's a very Haunted Mansion, right? You're sitting in, like, a Lazy Boy as you go through this ridiculous notion. This guy spent years developing this machine to get you ready in the morning. It's like this guy spent more time building this thing than you'd ever spend getting ready in your life. But it's a cool, like, it's a cool niche, like, archaic weird thing that it's novel and it's interesting.
Well, and you could even hear it, right? Like, there's the theremin version of the Casper theme. He's being shaved, right? Like, and like, and there's just flying blades and like squirt machines and everything, and Casper's like, oh wait, just sit back, oh my goodness, whoops, and like, and he's trying to be like cute as like things are happening, and then the ghostly trio show up, make a few puns, and like that's clearly what this is. Whatever, Daniel.
Well, considering that this movie so wanted to be a Tim Burton movie, I thought that was more of a Edward Scissorhands and Vendor reference, but I don't know. Go check out Werner Herzog's The Enigma of Casper Hauser instead. It's a much better Casper movie. Much better.
Watch Beetlejuice instead. I forget this
movie. Or check out the Casper mattresses.
Yeah. Or Dark Shadows, which I feel like essentially took this and did it better.
Dark, the movie?
The Tim Burton movie.
Ooh, that was bad.
I actually liked it, but whatever.
Well, you don't mean the show?
Yeah. The show is a slog. The show. My wife showed me... my wife showed me bits of the TV miniseries from the 90s, and that's much better. Or 80s. 80s, 90s. 90s, and that's better. But what I was going to say at the end of this, I guiltily saw this probably 20 times at least when I was a kid.
Dear Lord.
And I thought everything was funny. As an adult, I would be very uncomfortable showing this to kids, because like there's nothing about this where, like, Casper's not even a redeemable character because he's doing shit that's not appropriate. Right? Like,
he has one selfless moment, right? And that's kind of the pinnacle of the movie.
Yeah, I mean, and that's supposed to redeem him, but, like, this is kind of like a mixture of, like, well, I murdered someone, but I got that guy to the bus. I don't know. Here's the thing. The movie's just weird. I would almost say you should watch it just because of how uncomfortable it made me. I was surprised how, upon rewatch, like, I was bracing myself because I remembered bits of it. God, you're not even prepared. Anyway, so, again, new season. We're changing the rules over last year. Here's what we're doing. This is a Precocious Kid Month, man. And next month is a Matt Quinn pick. And then after that, we got a Daniel pick and a Thomas pick. They're all precocious kids. We're not going to give you any hints, but I'll give you one small footnote. Matt picked a movie about high schoolers, and no one's going to guess it. So on, keep going to the Facebook page. Keep giving us suggestions and keep referring us to precocious kids movies that you remember growing up. And stay tuned next week and every future week as we put another piece of your past on trial. Thanks, guys.
Man brain. You know you want it. You know you need it. Let me introduce you to our team of audio professionals, 100% committed to giving you the greatest extreme comedy podcast of all time.
What's SPH? I'm so super cute.
Send me your orgasmic release videos.
You can get it rootin'. You can get it tootin'. You can get it doing doughies in your yeet.
Mi nombre es Tio Yeti.
And you just laugh at little Hank.
I ain't gonna pretend I is fresh. But looks like you might like that.
And most importantly, I'm Skulka Raw. Go to manbrainpodcast.com to get orally violated. Manbrain out.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the T Public Store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.